Hello, everyone. Welcome back to our podcast, Angola West Africa, your source for news, interviews, and current affairs. I hope that everyone is having a great day. I'm your host, Douglas Black. We have a great show this week. I was able to spend some time with my very good friend, Peter Carr, to talk about Angola. I hope you enjoy the program, and please help out and tell a friend about our show. And please leave a review in Apple Podcast. We really appreciate your love and support. Now a word about our great sponsor, High Performance Services, HPS Angola. HPS has been providing quality professional services, fiber and VSAT services onshore and offshore for corporations and energy companies since 2005. Based in Luanda, HPS speaks your language in Angola. Go to HPS's website at www.hps-angola.com for information on their services and how to contact. Now, here's my conversation with Peter. I know you'll find it informative and very helpful. Very good friend. Peter, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm doing pretty good. I've just been vaccinated against the COVID. So things are looking up, and I'm as soon as Brazil opens the airways back to Angola, I'll be back in Angola.
Fantastic. I'm still waiting on my vaccine. Hopefully I'll get it in the next week or two. Peter, to begin a little bit, why don't you give us a little bit about your background and experience and how you came to be in Angola?
Well, I've worked all of my professional life. You know, I'm British, but I got married to a Brazilian, lived in Brazil most of my life. My kids are Brazilians. And I've always worked in IT or communications, and I was sent to Angola by a Brazilian company in 1998. At that time, the civil war in Angola, which started in the independence in 1975, was still raging. And we set up IT and telecommunications across Angola for the construction sites and for basically all of the diamond mines in Angola. I think we were the first to use Cisco IP telephony. And from then on, I became the general manager of a small Angolan telecommunications company called ACS, Angola Communications and Systems Limited. After that, I became a CIO of a bank that was connected to Barclays through a South African bank called Absa. And then I had my residency in Angola, so I started my own company. We started our company in 2012, and basically we were in are in the niche market of telecoms for oil and gas offshore. But Angola,
wow, Peter.
Yeah, that's basic.
That's a hell of a background. You've got a lot of experience in the Angolan marketplace.
Well, I'm a true veteran there. I've seen Angola go through many different phases. I've got to say, I do like Angola. It's an enormously rich country. They say it's the second largest oil and gas producer in Africa, but it rivals Nigeria. And, you know, it's also, I think, the third or fourth largest diamond producer in the world. And it could easily become the first, the largest diamond producer in the world. In fact, one of the Kimberlites at a place called Katoka is, they are expanding to Katoka, I think, is the fourth or fifth largest diamond mine in the world. And they are just about to open a new mine called Luaka, and that's supposed to be at least twice the size of their current mine. So Angola is enormously rich in minerals. One of the greatest wealths of Angola, which is not really mentioned a lot, is water. When Angola was a colony of Portugal, if you look at the main exports that the Portuguese made a lot of money in Angola, it was not oil and it was not diamonds. It was lumber, cotton, coffee. So the agricultural potential in Angola is absolutely enormous, and water is fundamental to this. Everything grows in Angola. Of course, on the other just say on the other side, everything here is a huge challenge, you know, to make things work here.
Well, I guess with all the water that's available in Angola, then electricity generation is good in Angola?
Well, basically the company that I work for, which is a Brazilian company, they basically, they have three main dams, hydroelectrics along the Kwanza River. And when I first got to Angola, you'd be a whole week on a generator. You could be 10 days on a generator and 2 days on the electricity supply. At least now in Luanda, you can live without a generator. The electricity now in Luanda is stable because they had the problem of building the dams. Then they had to build the transmission lines, and then they had to do the local distribution across the cities and towns. So, yeah, but I think the electricity problem has been definitely resolved, at least in the major cities.
Well, good. Well, that eliminates at least one barrier to business in Angola. Now, getting back to your experience, over the years, how have you found the business in Angola going? Is it improving? Are there still difficulties? What's your opinion on someone that might want to do business in Angola?
Well, I think I would say the situation has got worse. It definitely has got worse, and this was due to the situation with the exchange. When I first arrived in Angola, Angola basically worked with two currencies, the US dollar and the local currency, the Kwanza. And you could pay in the supermarkets, you could pay in the restaurants with Kwanzas, with dollars. You could pay anywhere. But now the currency restrictions are a major challenge to any company that wants to import into Angola.
Mm-hmm. I can remember the days walking around in Luanda with a wad of $100 bills in my pocket, you know, and everybody would accept it.
Everybody accepted it. Yeah, it was really easy, you know. I mean, and you could go to the bank. You could import. You have to remember that, like, at least 80%, and I'm very conservative, 80% of everything that you consume in Angola is imported. Angola produces. Okay, it produces oil, it produces diamonds, and some agricultural products. Everything else is imported. So the situation with the, when the dollar became scarce or unavailable, then that really destroyed a lot of the liquidity in the market. The people... You have something called zungueras who used to go. They were women who would go from Angola to South Africa to Brazil to Portugal and come back with three or four suitcases of stuff, and they would sell it. They would feed their families, and the money would circulate. But as there's no access to hard currency, nothing circulates now, and that's a very, very big challenge. You know, if you are...
So then for companies that are trying to get their profits out of Angola or to expatriate money, it's very difficult now, huh?
Well, it was very, very, very difficult. It is a little better now. And the tendency is, I think it will improve a little, you know, but it was almost impossible. I'm not even talking about... repatriation of dividends, or I'm just talking about buying. You want to buy a computer, you want to buy this, you want to buy that, you want to buy something, and you have to do a money transfer, a SWIFT transfer. You ask the bank, and at one time, it would take 3 months to transfer.
My goodness.
and sometimes it didn't go, you know, but things have improved a little bit. It does go, but it takes one or 2 weeks, just, or maybe up to a month, to get the money out of the country now.
Okay. Now, what does the bank require for you to make a payment outside, an invoice or?
Well, first of all, you have to be a registered company, and you have to be up to date with your taxes. Then you have to provide either a contract with the company that you wish, the foreign company that you wish to purchase goods with, and besides that contract, which has to be registered in the Ministry of the Economic Ministry, Ministry of Economy. Then you have to have the invoice for the actual goods. So there's quite a lot of bureaucratic processes.
Now, do all the documents have to be in Portuguese?
No. Well, the contract it's a good idea. What HPS does, my company, is we try to make contracts bilingual so that you have the English and the Portuguese. Of course, this is not possible with very large companies, but with smaller companies, it's possible. Because very large companies, they have their own contracts, you know. But it's better if it's in Portuguese, much better.
Okay. So then it has to be registered with the tax agency and the banking system?
No, the contract should be registered in the Ministry of Economy, and then you need to send a copy to the bank together with the invoice.
Now, do the Ministry of Economy, do they put a registration number on it or some identification?
Yes, they register it, right?
Okay.
There is some hope that maybe in the future this process will be revised, but this is the current process, right?
Okay. Well, if someone is looking to visit Angola, what's the visa situation like? What should they be concerned about in terms of getting to Angola legally?
The visa situation as a tourist has improved dramatically. A lot of you can look on the Angolan embassies or consulate sites. Most European countries and the states, you can get a visa. You can apply for it online, and you can get it at the airport. Before, it was very complicated and took about 30 days to get a visa. But now you can get them at the airport. So this has improved dramatically. Work visas are something different, but. Tourist visas are okay.
Now, a tourist visa, can a person get a tourist visa and go to Angola and have business meetings and look for business? Is there any restriction on what they can do?
No, there's no restriction. You can go and you can look for business. You can participate in meetings. A lot of people bring someone in for a very... sometimes for specific jobs, which is not entirely legal, but it's acceptable. However, these people cannot go offshore. You can definitely not go offshore with a tourist visa to work on the platforms.
Yeah, I understand you can't work on the logistics bases like Sonils and Soyo as well without a work visa.
Yeah, it's... that is true, but you can go in there as a tourist for meetings, right?
Okay, that's a good clarification. Now, the tourist visa is valid for how much time?
The tourist visas are 30 days, and they can be renewed twice when you're in country. So you could have a maximum of 90 days in Angola.
Okay. Now, do you need a letter of invitation to get that?
This was part of the older process. Visas can now be obtained online and at the airport when you arrive. Okay, so there's quite an easy process that you can see how to do that. From the Angolan.
So a letter of invitation from an Angolan company is no longer required.
It is better if you do it like that, but it's not really required now.
Okay. Do you know more or less what's the cost of a tourist visa?
I think it's about, I would estimate it's about $150. $150 was the price before they introduced the modification. So I would say you're looking at $150.
Okay. Well, that's not too bad. Now, culturally, say someone is an expat is coming to Angola to have a business meeting and really hasn't had much experience. Culturally, are there any customs or things they should be thinking about in terms of how to conduct themselves in the meeting? What's different about a business meeting in Angola than a business meeting in the U.S. or England?
Well, obviously, the main factor is the language, Portuguese. Angola was a Portuguese colony, and the principal language in Angola is Portuguese. If you speak to many Americans in the oil and gas business, most of them have been, for example, in Nigeria, and they will say they prefer Nigeria to Angola. And although Nigeria, I would say, is much more challenging than Angola, Nigeria has the advantage of speaking English. And it's people do speak English in Angola, but it's not that many, okay? Especially if you go outside of oil and gas and diamonds, then it's quite difficult. It's very challenging. The actual government... they have a policy in which they recommend that all foreign companies wishing to do business in Angola have a local partner. And HPS has moved into this space as well.
Okay, well, what can HPS do for a visitor that's really has no experience and no language skills in Portuguese? What can you do for them?
Well, we facilitate the things, right? Before we provided the visas, but now we find the connection. For example, if you want to do business with the Angolan government, either the military or the Ministry of Education or the police forces of security, They will require that you have a local partner. One of the reasons for this is the Angolan government stipulates that they only pay invoices in kwanzas. You have to have a company in Angola that can receive the money and then transmit it or send it to the actual suppliers or the companies outside of Angola. So HPS provides this interface into the government, into the customs, the local customs. They advise the foreign companies, and they provide the bridge, the translation, how things work in Angola, because they do. It's a little different doing business in Angola, and it's a little slower. And what you find is most expats coming to Angola, they get frustrated with the delays.
I know many Americans just don't have the patience.
Yeah, for example, we expanded into telemedicine, and we had a very good contract, a very good contact in the government, in the health ministry, for telemedicine kits. But the supplier was a small supplier in the States, and he just got frustrated. He just gave up because for him it just took too long. You know, it just took too long.
Yeah, that's probably one of the best words of advice if you want to do business in Angola. You need to have patience. You got to build the relationship. It just doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, because if you look at it really, the American supplier, he wasn't losing money. He was just providing invoices, technical information about his product. But after he did it once, twice, three times, he just got tired.
Yeah, I've seen that happen many times. Now, moving on to another subject. For someone coming to visit, what's the hotel situation like? Are credit cards accepted? What should they plan on expecting when they arrive?
Well, when I first arrived in Angola, the hotel situation was absolutely terrible. You couldn't get hotel for love or money. Prices were exorbitant. If you look at The Economist, you know, Luanda was one of the three most expensive cities in the world. So what happened? The Angolans built a lot of hotels. And now there is an enormous overcapacity in hotels. You can get hotels anywhere in Angola. It's very easy. They're quite expensive, but hotels are available easily.
Now, what when you say expensive, what's a typical day rate at a hotel?
I would say on the lower end, $100 a day, and then on the upper end, over $300, $400 at the top end.
Okay. Now, are credit cards readily accepted now?
Credit cards, Visa, readily accepted, yes. The credit card, it's called Multicash, and the debit card in Angola works quite well. It's reasonable, it's dependable. But I would not recommend that anybody comes to Angola without a few dollars in their pockets because, as they say, things happen, right? So
My experience has been out in the restaurants. When you get out of the hotel and go to a local restaurant, you really can't expect to accept a credit card there.
It depends. You've got two or three. Even if the restaurant does accept credit cards, sometimes the network is down, so it won't process. It's not advisable to go to Angola. We have had examples of people who come to visit us, and they haven't brought cash, and we've helped them, you know. So it's a good idea to bring some cash with you. The credit card, okay. I would say you can definitely pay your hotel with the credit card, definitely. You might have problems in restaurants, but a little bit of cash is always, you know, better to be safe than sorry.
Agree. Now, what about when an expat is arriving? What about personal security and getting around? How does he get to his meetings? I know traffic's horrible in Angola, and you know you're always getting stuck. But he really can't drive by himself. What do you recommend?
Well, when the expat arrives and at the airport, you know, his problem is basically his first problem is language. Okay, mm-hmm. You know, if he mm-hmm. doesn't speak. If he can get by with Spanish, Portuguese and Spanish is okay. The people will understand Spanish. So he should definitely arrange for somebody to pick him up, the people he's meeting with, his local contact, his local advisor. He will need a car and a driver to get around. Traffic, as you say, was absolutely horrible in Angola. It's good at the moment because of the COVID and the slowdown in the economy, but it was, you could easily get stuck on what's a 10 or 15 minute drive for 2-3 hours. But at the moment, the traffic is good because of the COVID, you know?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that, how is the COVID situation in Angola?
Well, what they actually did was they were quite clever. They actually just closed the country down, and there is very, very little COVID in Angola, actually. I was there until the end of January. I came out on the last flight to Brazil. The flights to Brazil are still closed, but they've opened up to Portugal and some places in Europe, Paris, I think, and Germany. But they locked down the country, and you know, everybody used masks. It's obligatory. So I think they've done well. Of course, if they open the country, they're at risk. So what they really need now is the vaccines so that they can, you know, it's a small population, Angola. It's like 24, 25 million people. So
a majority of them are in Luanda, right?
I think Luanda is about 7 million.
Okay.
7 million. Just,
uh-huh.
Yes? Hello, Doug?
Yeah, we're still here, Peter.
I'm sorry, yeah. Okay, sorry, what were you asking?
We were talking about the COVID situation, how you know they did the shutdown and everybody was required to wear a mask. So situation appears to be much better there than it is here in Brazil.
Oh, much, much better, and much better than South Africa. The risk is, you know, when they open it up again, they really need to vaccinate. And I think they'll be clear that there's very few cases of COVID in Angola, very few. But of course, mm-hmm. that's because it's locked down. So when you open it up, it's going to come, right? The people are going to bring it.
Right.
So what they need, in my opinion, is to push forward with the vaccines. And I would say that Angola, in the second half of the year, with the increasing in what the oil price now is, what, $60, I think Angola will be ready to press on with some good solid economic growth in the second half of the year, definitely in 2022.
Yeah, the news reports I've been watching are predicting that sub-Saharan Africa, including Angola, looks to be on a growth path. Now, going back, just one more question on COVID. If I recall, the Angola requires a PCR test before you travel. Is that correct?
Yes, that is exactly correct. You won't get into Angola if you don't have a PCR examination within 72 hours of flying. I wouldn't be surprised if soon they add on that you have to be vaccinated. It's currently they don't ask for that, but I think they might start asking for that in the next couple of months.
That's reasonable. Yeah,
that's but definitely without the PCR, you don't get into Angola.
Okay. And that has to be 72 hours before travel, correct?
A maximum of 72 hours, yes, a maximum.
Okay. Very good. All right, Peter, we've covered a lot of subjects here today. Is there anything else, any advice or any other topic that you think the listeners might be interested in?
Well, I think Angola has a tremendous amount of opportunity. We looked at something really strange. You know, we did a study about Kenya. Kenya exports something like 430 million euros in flowers to the mainly to Belgium and Holland.
400 million euros.
Yeah, by quarter for 3 months.
Wow, a lot of money.
Yeah, and I found this out because I have a friend in the airport, and a flight came down from Belgium to Luanda bringing cargo, and then it flew across to Nairobi empty and loaded up with flowers and took them back to Europe. So if that is economically viable, surely it would be economically viable to produce flowers in Luanda. And I think, you know, flowers, spices, and fruit, you know, Angola has to start somewhere. And
before the war, Angola was a big agricultural producer, wasn't it?
Well, it was this is where the Portuguese colony, it was the jewel in the Portuguese crown. And they made all of their money, all of the money that the Portugal made from the colony of Angola was from agricultural products. And this is where I think there needs to be growth. I think there's opportunities there. It's not really my sector. I was always in IT and telecoms. But I think there's a huge business opportunity in this area because land is not expensive. Water is readily available. You have to pick...
The government's really pushing agricultural programs too, isn't it?
Well, there are grants for agricultural projects, yes. So that is a possibility too. But there's... You know, there's a lot of pitfalls, and We can give you one example of a huge pitfall. A company called Biocom, which is basically Brazilian investors, opened sugarcane. They planted sugarcane and are producing sugar, but the sugar that they produce in Angola is more expensive than the sugar on the international market. And why is that? It's because everything that they use to produce the sugar is imported. So you have to choose your products carefully. I think you have to choose your products very carefully. I mean, people forget as well, after the Amazon, I think the second largest tropical rainforest in the world is in a place called Myombi, which is a large part of the Myombi tropical forest is in the province of Cabinda. And, of course, a lot of it runs over into the DRC, Congo. But
okay,
this huge...
Now, Cabinda's in the north of Angola, right?
Yeah, it's an enclave. It's a province. It's in the north of Angola. It's where a lot of oil is produced as well.
Okay.
But, I mean, I would say lumber in Angola is a huge business. A long time ago, I was involved in the installation of, people planted tomatoes and they started to produce ketchup. So you would see that you have to have something that takes the basic product, the industrial product, the agricultural product, and industrializes it. So I would say agriculture. I mean, what did Portugal produce? It was cotton. Lumber, coffee. You know, Angola was a large exporter of coffee as well. So there's a lot of opportunity in agro-industry in Angola.
Okay.
Actually, people there are starting to grow. Some Brazilians went there and they're actually growing grapes and starting to produce Angolan wine.
So, wine in Angola.
Yeah, wine in Angola. And the wine, and some of the wine some of the wine that's being produced is over $100 a bottle.
My goodness, I didn't
know that. That's pretty recent in the last 5 years. So you can see there is possibilities in this area.
Now, what region has the climate that can grow grapes?
It's Kwanza North. It's on the Kwanza North near the Kwanza River. You asked about the hydroelectric. The Kwanza River has the three dams.
Right.
So there's no flooding there. It's controlled. It produces the electricity and there's just a lot of water, you know. There's a lot of water to grow stuff.
Okay. I never imagined Angola to be a wine producer. I'll have to try and find a bottle.
Yeah.
Now, while you were talking, something else came into my mind that maybe you can comment on. In the past, you know, every street corner there was a Chinese company or Chinese workers, a lot of investment from China. Is that still occurring in Angola?
There was a huge... Angola for many years tried to get loans from the International Monetary Fund. I think recently they actually secured one. But the values of the loans were so small and the conditions were so strict that basically the Angolan government looked for anybody who would provide financing. And the Chinese stepped in and provided billions of dollars to Angola, billions of dollars to Angola in financing. And with this, there was a huge influx of Chinese, a huge, huge influx of Chinese. And they opened, before in Angola, you would go, I'm going to the Chinese restaurant. And there was only one Chinese restaurant in Angola. Today, there's over 100. So
I remember there was one in Luanda, Ni Hao.
Yeah, it was on the island, on the Luanda island. So
Right.
Now there's over 100. Now, a lot of the boom, the major Chinese boom has stopped a little bit since the new president, John Lorenzo, assumed in 2017. So there's been a definite slowdown. Many Chinese have left. It's not as many as before. but there's still a lot of small Chinese businesses around. So, but they're not providing the same level of financing as before. And there seems to be some disagreement between the Angolan government and the Chinese Sobe previous contract. So a lot of people, a lot of Angolans complain about the workmanship of the Chinese. It was, you know, they built roads, they built a whole housing estate, or more than one housing estate, a whole complex called Kalamba, which is, I don't know, over 500 buildings and houses, and a lot of that work seems to be poor quality.
They built Zongo as well, didn't they?
They did what?
Did they build the Zongo complex?
Yes, it was Zongo. Yeah, Zongo and Kalamba. Remember, it was absolutely huge.
Huge.
Yeah,
they're huge.
Zongo is actually better than Kalamba because they built houses. And the advantages of a house is you have a small plot of land, and you can actually, so if you have the money, you can improve the house. But, you know, if you're in a 15-floor apartment block with six apartments on the floor, then you really, there's not much you can do if the workmanship is not that good, really.
Yeah, I spent a year or two at an apartment in Kalamba. It was a piece of shit.
Well, there you go, and that's it. So there's one of the disagreements, you know, that between the two governments, but they'll probably sort it out. The problem is the problem is Europe and the States, they're not, because of the history, the past history in Angola, and the way independence was gained in Angola, Angola was kind of forced as well to accept Russian help, which obviously didn't really satisfy the Americans. The Angolans are in no way communist. I don't think Africans are communists. You know, they're like everybody else. They want
to
get ahead.
Capitalists to be.
They're pure capitalists. But, you know, the geopolitical situation in which they were basically forced into Russia's hands because Portugal was an ally of the States and so on. But all those problems are part of the past now. And I think that Angola is definitely a very capitalist, democratic country. And hopefully they can move forward.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, they have a lot of possibilities, a lot of opportunities. So,
well, the thing is, it's enormously rich, isn't it? It's enormously rich country. It's and it's a small population, and although probably it's not politically correct, you know, it's due to the Portuguese colonization. It's like 99% Christian. And another great advantage of Angola is due to the war, where people and like everybody, almost every man was inducted into the armed forces, and they were sent all over the country. There's not the problems that you had in Rwanda between the Hutus and the Tutsis, or you have in Kenya between two parties. The tribes in Angola, they seem to live in relative peace. There's not a lot of tribal animosity in Angola, which is very positive, you know.
Yeah,
they seem to live and also, they understand each other and get on well together.
Right. Also, you know, the population is a young population. I mean, there's a lot.
Well, all Africa is a young population, you know. It's a young population because I think the average lifespan in Angola, I think, is about 45 or 50 years old. But, I mean, it's a huge challenge. You need to educate. You need to, you know. I mean, most of Africa, including Angola, has skipped over the telephone lines. Everybody uses the smartphones. So, you know. at the moment, you know, if you look at what's happening in the world in the cryptocurrencies and the DeFi aspect, this hasn't really come to Angola yet. You know, companies like Electronium that work with that can be used in other African countries to pay your telephone bills, that hasn't come to Angola. So there's no payment systems. You know, in Rwanda or Kenya, again in Tanzania, you can pay through your phone. That hasn't come to Angola. You can pay your bills through the phone. It's the banking system in Angola también has a lot of problems. There's a lot of loans that basically haven't been paid back. So there's a lot of work to be done in Angola, I would say, a lot of things to be fixed.
Now, you talked a little bit about education. How is the education system? Are there a lot of educated workers available, or does it still need to be developed?
Well, if you compare over the 20-odd years that I'm there, it's night and day. You know, before there was nobody. Now, I mean, before I used to look for Cisco people to train in Cisco and you Cisco networking, CCNA or whatever. You couldn't find anybody, but now a lot of people are qualified, certified. There's a few Microsoft certified people, Oracle certified people. It needs to increase, you know. But most of the all of the banks, for example, are somewhere in their technical people are 80 to 90% Angolan. So there has been a large growth, but it's nowhere near enough. You know, you need a lot more.
Yeah. I know a lot of the expat companies that are working in Angola, they send the Angolans outside for additional education and training.
Well, one of the problems we faced and the way we solved it was, you know, to be honest, there was a time when Angolans would take these trips and they were just like pleasure trips. They wouldn't go there to learn anything. They go there to have fun, right?
Right.
Especially, well, we won't name any companies, but there you go. But what you really need from the Angolan companies is incentives. We will train you. You get the certification. You get an automatic rise, a pay rise. And you've got to incentivate it. And you've got to be quite strict as well. You know, we'll pay the first training. We'll pay the first exam. If you don't pass, we'll pay no more training, but we'll pay the second exam. If you don't pass in the second exam, then it's your problem. And what the guys see is, you know, you've got four or five people to be trained. Maybe one guy or two guys pass and three guys don't. And these guys get better pay. But you don't actually see people improving because they've got the certification. So it's not really regimented in the HR procedures, I would say. Well, it is, but it can be improved dramatically, you know. If somebody gets a certification, he should get an advantage from that certification, in my opinion.
Agree.
Because... you know, you do it why? You do it to get more money for you and your family. That's why you do
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Now, for a young professional in Angola, let's say Cisco trained, what is a typical salary that he can expect?
Well, obviously the filet mignon, as they say, that the top is the oil and gas industry, right? Because the oil and gas industry, they have a tendency to pay international rates. And this was one of the problems that generated everybody in the oil and gas industry until about 2015. They received their salaries in US dollars. And then after about 2015, they started paying in kwanzas. So that was not so good. But anyway, the oil and gas are the top industries, oil and gas support. After that is the banks and the telecom. I would say somebody with a CCNA or some basic equivalent certificate in Microsoft could expect to receive the equivalent of about $2,000. Salaries are actually quite high, but you see, you can't actually buy a lot with $2,000 in kwanzas. Remember, you're not going to get the money in dollars. You get the money in kwanzas. And the difference
and
between...
Kwanzaa is worth about what now? Are dollars worth how many kwanzas today?
Well, there's three rates, right? There's the BNA, which is Banco Nacional de Angola, which is the central bank, and that's the lowest rate, which is just about just over 600. In the commercial banks, it's about 630. And, well, it fluctuates on the streets. I mean, on the streets 2 weeks ago, it was about 800. Now it's dropped down to 700. Okay. I think the reason that this has happened is mainly due to the restrictions of COVID. Nobody can travel. Mm-hmm. So there's no real requirement for hard currency unless you're buying something out of the country, right?
Right.
So there's no tourist movement. But basically it's that 600, 630, buy 650, sell. And it was 800 on the streets. So that's it.
Well, I remember the little ladies sitting beside the road selling dollars or kwanzas. Are they still doing that?
Well, the government has tightened up a little bit on that, but it's still there. It's like you used to say, I'm going down to the bank, I'll meet you under the big tree where the woman sat down.
Right.
And, you know, you change it there.
Right.
They have tried to tighten that up, but you could still buy and sell dollars on the streets in Angola. You do have to be a little careful. You mentioned crime in Luanda.
Right.
Actually, you can always be in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know. But in general, Angola is not, I wouldn't consider it a dangerous. It's certainly a lot safer than Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. It's
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, the police that I see on the street, they don't mess around. If they see something, they're going to, they'll take care of it pretty quickly.
No, the police don't mess around. The police don't mess around. What you found now is there's an uptake of, because it was very common in Angola that people would go into banks and come out with big, thick envelopes because of the kwanzas.
Right, right.
You know, you could fill up a plastic bag or a paper bag with money. Mm-hmm. So the most recent crime is people on motorbikes. Either they know, they have information that somebody's there to pick up money, or they watch and they see that somebody comes out with money. I mean, obviously, you don't walk around the streets at night, do you? I mean, it's pretty basic.
Agreed.
If you go somewhere, you go somewhere in the car, you get out of your car, you park it where there's somebody who takes care of the car and so on. But I would say I've been there 20 years and I've never had a problem. So, and most people I know have never had a problem. It's quite rare.
Yeah, I've been there, I guess, 13 years now, and I like you, I've never had a problem. But I'm always a little nervous when I get a pick up money at the bank and I'm walking out to the car. Make sure I get to the car before somebody gets me, but I've never had a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I used to do a lot of that. I picked up a lot of money on occasions in the past, which I wouldn't do. Well, you can't do it today either, but I wouldn't do that anymore. So
No.
You
remember in the past, you had to pay everything with cash.
You had to pay everything with cash, exactly. It was right. The only way it worked. That was life.
Yeah. But it's getting better. All right, Peter. Well, this has been a great conversation. Anything else you would like to add for our audience?
Well, I think, we didn't talk really about Angola as a tourist destination.
Good point.
I think Angola, with the quantity of the hotels and the improvement in the facilities, is a potential for an increase in tourism in Angola after this period. For example, I've been a few times, I think you've been as well, to the Kusama Game Park. And the Kusama Game Park, it's about 100 kilometers outside
it's about an hour's drive from Luanda.
Yeah, about an hour's drive, just over an hour. And, you know, there weren't that many animals there. Yeah, you go, over, it's before Sumbi, you just go over the bridge at the Rio Kwanza, and it's about 30 kilometers after the bridge.
Yeah.
But there weren't that many animals there, and a lot of this was due to, A, people killed them during the war, and B, they were frightened away. C, there was also landmines, which the landmine problem has pretty much disappeared. And what you've noticed in the past 5 years at Kusama is there's been an increase in the game. The animals have started to come back.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's very, very positive, actually. Very positive.
Well, you know, I've done some driving around in the interior, and I know you've done a lot, but Angola is basically unspoiled. Like you said, not a lot of people. The country's still pretty pure. I mean, tourism could be a very big thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's some really beautiful places. You go down to Benguela, Bahia Fata, and down south, there's a lot of untouched beaches. A good friend of mine who had the strange name of Michael Jackson used to participate every year in the marlin fishing. I think the marlin fishing in Angola is the best in the world.
They say 100 kilos. Championship fishing.
Yeah, so there's a huge opportunity in fishing. And actually, fishing is one area in agriculture as well, agro-industry, that the fishing in Angola is huge. You know, they have an unspoiled coastline. It's not polluted. So there's a lot of opportunities there.
Exactly. No, it's, future holds a lot of possibilities for Angola, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Peter, I believe we can probably begin wrapping up. I really enjoyed the conversation. It's been great talking to you. Appreciate you coming by and spending time with us.
Well, I hope, thank you for the invitation, Doug, and I hope that, hope this has been in some way useful to somebody somewhere who
I'm sure it has.
Who can maybe take advantage and see a beautiful country, because Angola, in my opinion, is a very beautiful country, you know, and there's opportunity.
I agree. No, you've given us a lot of information. I'm sure lots of people will find it very, very useful and informative. It's been great.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, Peter. Well, you have a great day, and hopefully we'll have you on again sometime in the future.
What a great interview.
Okay.
So
thank you.
It's such a pleasure to have Peter come by and talk to us. I really enjoyed it. I hope you found the information helpful, useful, and Peter did a great job talking about his time in Angola, what he's accomplished, and what Angola still has to offer, much opportunities, both in agriculture and tourism, and still natural resources. You know, diamond mining is really kicking off big now. They've been a big petroleum producer for a long time. But excellent. Really enjoyed it, time talking to him, and I hope to have him back soon. So please leave us a review, help out. Leave us a review on Apple Podcast. Tell at least one friend about our podcast, and hopefully you enjoyed it and help someone else to find our podcast. So for now, this is your host, Douglas Black, saying thank you so much, and we'll be back next week. We plan on having another good friend come by to speak with us next week. That's Jaime Kuhl, a longtime entrepreneur in the internet space in Angola, and now very heavily involved in helping startups within the country. So please tune in next week, and we'll be talking to Jaime. Have a great day.